So it's good to see everybody here. I was here 3 years ago, I guess it was 2007, in the first conference. And so when I heard about this conference, the first thing I did was I listened to my talk from 2007. I don't advise doing that for those of you who are considering it. It was a depressing experience, and in particular, it was a depressing experience because I sort of bathed everybody in technicalities, and no one really saw what the point was. So today, what I'm going to try and do is I'm going to try and tell my story without going into too many details. I'm just going to try to appeal more to your imagination than to your intellect. So here's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about K-theory. So I want to talk about algebraic K-theory. Now, algebraic K-theory is basically a machine that turns certain, well, Ralph Cohen has already said the word infinity category, so I can also say the words infinity category. Infinity categories of a certain kind, I'll call these Waldhausen infinity categories. I won't go into any details about these. I'll only deal with the special class of them by the end. It'll convert it into a spectrum. And for my purposes, I'm only going to be working with connective spectra, so I'll write this for connective spectra. So it's a machine that turns categories of such and such type into connective spectra. And there's a good supply of these kinds of categories around, namely from ordinary classical algebraic geometry. Well, there's a good way to turn any scheme into one of these guys. Namely, what you can do is if you've got a scheme X, then you can assign to it the infinity category corresponding to the homotopy theory of perfect complexes. So by the way, just for those of you who are technicians, when I say scheme, I actually mean quasi-compact, quasi-separated scheme, so I don't have to be fuzzy about this. So there's a good supply of these things, and in fact, this defines a contravariant functor here, because if I've got a morphism of these guys, a morphism of schemes, then I can just take the pullback functor, and that goes from perf OY to perf OX. Okay, so I've got this sort of good supply of these kinds of Waldhausen infinity categories. And by the way, notice that these are just stable infinity categories, so to speak. So easy definition of stable infinity category. A stable infinity category is what you would require of an infinity category if you wanted to say triangulated infinity category, but you have to say it in the infinity categorical context. So these are some kinds of triangulated categories with full information about the mapping spaces and the information about how to compute all the homotopy limits and homotopy co-limits that exist. So, and then we have this machine algebraic K-theory, and what does it do? It's going to take one of these, in this case, stable infinity categories, and it's going to pull out of it a spectrum, and it's going to do so in a way that's sort of a universally additive invariant. And so this statement is actually the statement of a theorem. It says that the original constructions of K-theory are, in fact, universally additive invariants. So if it's a theorem, I better tell you who proved it. So this is proved independently by Bloomberg, Tabuada, and Geppner, David Geppner, of course, sorry, and David Geppner, and also by me and John Rogner. Slightly different ways of saying the same thing, but the theorem is true. So there's some universally additive invariant of your stable infinity category, and that's given to you by some connective spectrum. And now we've got a good supply of these. Those come from the category of schemes, and we can extract the perfect complexes and take the K-theory of that. So that gives us a pre-sheaf of spectra. We go from the category of schemes to the category of connective spectra. And well, if you're an algebraic geometer, the first thing you ask anytime you're presented with a pre-sheaf of anything is you ask whether it's a sheaf for any interesting topology. So question, is this a sheaf for any interesting topologies? And the answer is, well, it depends on what you mean by interesting. If you consider the Zariski topology interesting, then the answer is yes. If you consider the Nisnevich topology interesting, then at least with some finiteness conditions on your schemes, the answer is again yes. So Zariski and Nisnevich, you get yeses. Check. Nisnevich, check. But once we start to get much finer than the Nisnevich topology, we start to run into trouble. So in particular, when we go to the Atal topology, disaster. I don't know how to draw a disaster. This is supposed to be like an explosion, but I'm not really sure. Anyway. So when you get to the Atal topology, something bad happens. And let me say a little bit about what the bad thing that happens is. The bad thing that happens is that, well, I mean, it doesn't satisfy K-theory, but so let's think about it a little more precisely. So more precisely, we can consider the Atal sheafification. No matter what K-theory is, whether it's a sheaf or not a sheaf, we can consider its Atal sheafification. And by the way, this didn't matter for the Nisnevich site as long as you're a finite coil dimension, but here it matters. I really mean the hypersheafification. So I'm gonna try and enforce descent with respect to all Atal hypercoverings. And now the theorem, which I don't know, I should probably write more names that I'm writing here, but you know, Thomason had the original idea. Jardine reformulated it and perfected it in better language. But the theorem is that if you're willing to invert L, and here L is a prime that is invertible, in some sufficiently nice, I'll just write sufficiently nice, scheme S, if L is invertible there, then when you take the Atal sheafification of the mod L K theory, then this is the same thing as the Bott inverted mod L K theory. Yeah, this is for schemes over S, right? On schemes over S. And really, I'm probably restricting to something like Noetherian schemes of finite curl dimension over S, and I need to assume that S is Noetherian of finite curl dimension. And also, there's some pretty hefty conditions that you should write down, but I'm not going to bother. So these guys are different. In fact, there's lots of examples that show these guys are different, but maybe the example that I enjoyed the best is due to Bloch and Eno, which is that they say, suppose that you have any quadric hypersurface in P5 over C, any quadric. Defined over Q. Then there's a hyperplane section defined over some number field. And an element, I don't want to say this, and a non-zero element hyperplane section X, say, a non-zero element X with coefficients in Z mod L to the nu of K naught that vanishes after inverting the Bott element. robot element. So that tells you that this thing definitely isn't going to satisfy Ittal descent, and it sort of gives you the sort of broad class of examples. It shows you that this is sort of going to be a generic problem, this failure of Ittal hyperdescent. So you can repair it, and if you repair it, then what you get is sort of bot-inverted K theory. But suppose that you didn't want to. So suppose let's restrict attention to the following circumstance. Let's say that I've got a field K, and I'm interested in understanding the relation between K and its separable closure. Now, computations of Suslin tell us exactly what the K theory of an algebraically closed field is. So let me go to the algebraic closure instead. What the K theory of an algebraically closed field is, it's always just KU completed at L. So if we look at the L completed K theory of an algebraically closed field, it's this guy. And so if K theory satisfied Ittal descent, then you could do the following, or if L attic K theory satisfied Ittal descent, then what you could do is you could take the homotopy fixed points for the action of the absolute Galois group of K on this K theory, and what would you obtain? You'd obtain exactly the K theory of K. Tragically, that's not true, because again, K theory doesn't satisfy descent. The purpose of this conference is to talk about some of the good uses of derived algebraic geometry, and maybe some of the successes of derived algebraic geometry. But I'd like to talk about one of the failures of derived algebraic geometry here. And I'd like to talk to you about one of the ways that it seems that it can be rectified. So first let's have a look at a false proof of this non-theorem. It's always good to have false things on the board. It sharpens the mind. So the first thing that we notice is that we're not really taking into account all the structure that we have, right? If we've got a field extension and we're taking the K-theories of these things, there's more data involved here. So what did I say? I said that K-theory was a way of turning a Waldhausen infinity category into a connective spectrum. Now, there's more to it than that. Namely, if you've got some kinds of monoidal structures here, if you have, for example, a symmetric monoidal Waldhausen infinity category, then that's going to translate over to an E infinity ring spectrum. More generally, if you have an EN monoidal infinity category here and you hit it with K-theory, that's going to give you an EN ring spectrum. So K-theory likes to preserve these algebraic structures. So K-theory preserves algebraic structures of this kind, and so what we can do is we can say, well, look, you know, I happen to know something about the infinity category of perfect complexes on your favorite scheme. The thing I happen to know is that it comes equipped with a symmetric monoidal structure, namely the tensor product, or if you like, the derived tensor product. I know more than that. I know that if I take F upper star of the tensor product of two complexes, and again, everything is suitably derived here, but I'm doing it off stage so that you can't see, then that's going to coincide with the tensor product of the pullback. So if I have a morphism of schemes and I pull back a tensor product, that's the tensor product of the pullbacks. What does that mean? That means that from schemes off to Waldhausen infinity categories, this is actually a functor not to just Waldhausen infinity categories, but indeed to symmetric monoidal Waldhausen infinity categories. So I'll write this O times to suggest that. And then the fact that this K-theory preserves algebraic structures, what does that say? That says that if I put O times here, then I can actually lift this to E infinity ring spectra. So I'll just write E infinity algebra. Okay, so now we've got a good supply of E infinity algebra. Now, the whole project of DAG is to start off, you start with E infinity algebras, and extract from them geometric objects. And then you fiddle with the geometric objects. You take quotients to get various kinds of stacks, or, you know, you do more complex things. But this first stage I figured was already pretty interesting. What have I got? I've got a functor from schemes op to E infinity algebras. Or in other words, I have a functor from schemes to E infinity algebras op. And these are supposed to be providing good examples of some category of derived schemes. So if I take any scheme and I perform this construction, this is a K-theory and this is spec, then I get some kind of affine derived scheme out of it. And so the question is, and I mean, if you think about this construction, you're taking an arbitrary scheme, not necessarily affine, and you're extracting from it an affine, a derived affine. So you can kind of think of this as some sort of fancified version of the usual affination, you know, the usual affination says, you know, take your scheme and take spec of the global sections of the structure sheaf. This is kind of like that, only instead you're taking spec of the K-theory of the structure sheaf, if you want to think about it in those terms. So this is some kind of way of turning your scheme into an affine scheme, an affine-derived scheme. And so then the idea is, well, look, you know, you got geometry on each side. How does this geometry here translate to this new geometry here? And the answer is it doesn't very well. Unfortunately, there's nothing really sensible that you can say. So here's my false proof of the non-theorem that I'm erasing. So, non-theorem. If K into L is a Galois extension, then the K-theory of K, at least completed away from the characteristic, is equivalent to the K-theory. Oh, now I've used L for too many things here. I'll call this capital K. The K-theory of K. Nope, now I've used K for too many things. Capital L, then. I won't be using any L theory, I hope. To this thing, once you take the homotopy fixed points for the Galois action. And this is false, as I said, non-theorem. But so here's the non-proof of the non-theorem. So the non-proof of the non-theorem goes like this. It says, well, look, if I've got an Atal morphism of schemes, then when I apply this affination functor, I better get an Atal morphism out. That in particular means that the cotangent complex of this map, so I've definitely got a map. Nobody's arguing this point. I've definitely got a map. The cotangent complex of this thing vanishes. These are both connective spectra. So when I look at the pi naught of them, I see that I get an isomorphism already. K-theory of fields is in degree zero is well computed. Therefore, this is an equivalence. Done. Now, of course, that's false because the cotangent complex here doesn't vanish. So the lie is that the cotangent complex doesn't vanish. The cotangent complex of, say, the K-theory of L completed, over the K-theory of K, L completed, it's just not zero. I don't even know what it is, but I can see that it's non-zero because I have counterexamples. So you might think that, all right, we're done here. I mean, you know, K-theory doesn't satisfy descent. We've checked it. You know, we've looked at it another way, and we saw that it didn't when we looked at it another way. So let's just leave it alone, shall we? But the problem is that we can't leave it alone because of the Quillen-Lichtenbaum conjecture. Or I don't know, Rick, you can probably tell me what I'm supposed to be calling this. I always call it the Quillen-Lichtenbaum conjecture, but I always feel like I'm naming it wrong. I never know what to name it anymore. The Quillen-Lichtenbaum conjecture states that if you look at the, well, let me just work in the L-complete case. If you look at the L-complete K-theory of S, space, S is some, you know, again, good scheme, then the natural map from this guy, well, let me just state it in the case of this field extension here. So if I look at the L-completed K-theory of K, and I look at the natural map to the L-completed K-theory of L, and then I take the homotopy fixed points for the Galois action, then this is an equivalence stably. The stably is a necessary adverb here. What I mean is that in degrees above the L-adic cohomological dimension of the Galois group, this thing is supposed to be an equivalence on the KM. Now, this is a hard conjecture to make sense of in the language of derived algebraic geometry. In the language of derived algebraic geometry, we like the input objects to be nice, clean spectra, and we like to take spec of them. But this isn't giving you, so this, even if we believe that this is solved, which I guess nowadays we do, this doesn't give you a spectrum level description of this guy, description of this L-complete K-theory. It doesn't. It just tells you what the group should be in high enough degrees. Well, so I guess nowadays the Bloch-Kato conjecture was known to imply the Quillen-Lichtenbaum conjecture, and the Bloch-Kato conjecture is on good footing. So this is no longer a conjecture. This is actually supposed to be true. I'm sorry to use so many weasel words, but I don't know the proof myself, so I can't say more. But smart people believe it, so that's good enough. But the question is, what's really going on here? Why can't we get a spectrum-level interpretation of what the K-theory of K is, at least L-completed? And moreover, why didn't this strategy work? Why did DAG fail us so completely here? So the idea, and this is an idea that was sort of adapted from Gunnar Karlsson and grew out of conversations with Grace Liu, and, well, I'm sure other people have thought of the same thing, is that we really haven't used all the structure at our disposal when we think about this functor, this K-theory functor. Let me lift it up a little higher here. This K-theory functor goes from schemes to E-infinity ring spectra, and the idea is that we haven't quite used as much of the structure as we want to be able to use. So the idea is to use more structure. Use more structure. And when I say use more structure, what I really mean is use more functoriality. So after a glass of water, I'll tell you what that means. So what does use more functoriality mean? Use more functoriality means that, well, we appreciated the fact that if we had a morphism of schemes, then pullback carried perfect objects to perfect objects. By the way, that's an easy 5-second exercise. I'll let you think about why that's true. However, push forward doesn't. There's another functor lying around, right, which is the push-forward functor. And for a general morphism of schemes, it's not the case that if you take the push-forward of a perfect thing, you're going to get a perfect thing. Just as when you take push-forwards of vector bundles, they tend not to be vector bundles anymore. However, that will be true if our map is flat and proper. So if F, from Y to X, I guess I'm doing it, is flat and proper, then F lower star carries perfect complexes on OY to perfect complexes on OX. And so it in particular induces a morphism between the K-theory spectra. Well, that's quite good. However, we have a problem. One of the whole things that was, and I've erased it now, but one of the whole things that was making this a functor from schemes to E-infinity algebras was the fact that the upper star, the pullback, was compatible with tensor products. If I take the pullback of a tensor product of two things, that's the tensor product of the pullbacks. That's no longer true here. This is not compatible with our tensor product. And by the way, this is, of course, the right-derived functor of F lower star. for those of you keeping score. This is not compatible with tensor product. However, but we do know a few things. So let me tell you what the things are that we know. Well, the first thing we know has to do with forming pullbacks in the category of scheme. So if what I have is, let's say, a flat and proper map here, let's call him F, and I've got some other map here, and I form the pullback, well, this is again flat and proper, right? Let's call this map G. Let's call him F again and him G again, just to be perverse. Then I know something about what happens if I take the pullback, if I take the pullback of G followed by the push forward along F. So if I take the pullback of G followed by the push forward along F, then this actually agrees with what I get if I take the push forward along F followed by the pullback along G. This is called flat base change. This is a theorem. So that theorem is true. And there's another theorem that's also true, which is that, well, G isn't compatible with tensor products, or have I misnamed everything? No, I've not. F lower star is not compatible with tensor products. But, well, what are we doing? We're thinking of it as a functor from perfect complexes on OY to perfect complexes on OX. It does have an exceptionally nice property. That exceptionally nice property is that it, well, F upper star, right, gives perf OY the structure of a perf OX module. And this is a map of those modules. So F lower star is a, well, I'll say it this way, is a perf OX module map. These things are true. All right, so what does this all amount to? Well, what it amounts to is the following result. K-theory defines more than just a functor from schemes over S to E infinity ring spectra. It defines a Mackey functor. So K defines a Mackey functor on schemes, and I'll go ahead and say spectrum valued Mackey functor on schemes. And in fact, it's an algebra, it's a commutative algebra in this category of Mackey functors. So in fact, it's an E infinity, what's called Green functor. That's a commutative monoid in this world of Mackey functors. So let me tell you what this means and why it's interesting. So what does this mean? This means that I have to try and move that board. Why is that board harder to move than all the others by such a significant amount? That's the real question. So what is a Mackey functor? So in order to define a Mackey functor, I need some kind of category. And in fact, in general, you want to work with an infinity category. But let me just stick with category for now. And I'm going to define two subcategories of this category. One of them is going to be called C upper dagger, and the other one is going to be called C lower dagger. And, well, I'm not going to go into too much details about these things, but I call the maps of this one the egressives and the maps of this one the ingressives. And I'll sort of explain why. The idea is that what we're trying to do is we're trying to squeeze together a covariant functor, right? This F lower star is giving us a covariant functor from flat and proper maps to spectra, but this F upper star is giving us a contravariant functor from schemes to spectra. So I'm going to use, but since I've got to put restrictions on the various kinds of maps I'm allowed to use, I'm going to have to specify some subcategories where those guys are defined. So what do I do? So this is a category, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to define using this category with these substructures a new category called the Burnside category. This is the positive Burnside category. If you want the better one, you'd have to group complete, but let's not worry about that right now. So the objects of this guy are going to be just the objects of our original C. But the maps are going to be a little more curious. The maps, so if I have a particular object X and a particular object Y, a map is going to be a diagram consisting of an egressif from U to X and an ingressif from U to Y. And now, well, if this is a map from X to Y, if this is a map from X to Y, how do I compose them? Well, I need some more properties of my category C in order to be able to compose them. What properties do I need? I need to know that anytime I have a diagram so that looks like this, where this map is egressive and this map is ingressive, then I can form the pullback inside this category. And this map will again be egressive and this map will again be ingressive. If that's the case, then I've defined the composition between these two things from X to Z. Now, of course, composition is only defined up to coherent homotopy, but that's why we do infinity category theory in the first place, is so we can have composition defined up to coherent homotopy. So this defines a perfectly good infinity category, which is called the positive Burnside category. In fact, there's more. If C itself has products, so for this I needed a special class of pullback maps to exist, but if C itself has products, then those products descend to here as a symmetric monoidal structure. It's not the Cartesian product anymore, but it is a symmetric monoidal structure. So if C has products, then we actually get a symmetric monoidal category. Yeah? It's additional data on C. The starting data is a category C. So he was asking whether the notion of ingressive and egressive were somehow already intrinsic to C or whether they were additional data. They're additional data. The data that you start with is a category equipped with two classes of maps closed under composition with this funny property here, namely that if you pull back a map of one class along a map of the other, then you get the corresponding diagram. So there it is. There's the positive Burnside category. Now then, who cares? Well, I do, and probably most of you do. So there are tons of examples of situations in which you can run this kind of game. And many of them are interesting. So, of course, we have an example staring us right in the face, namely we've got the category of schemes itself. We're going to take the category of schemes itself, and I'm just going to have everybody be egressive, because for my purposes, pullback is always a good idea. So pullback is always a good idea, so everything's egressive. And then my ingressives, well, I said that push forward was only something we wanted to really think about if the map was flat and proper. So flat and proper maps only. So we can take the Burnside category of this guy. And K-theory defines a functor from here to the category of spectra. This is the notion of a Mackey functor, a spectrally valued Mackey functor. By the way, notice, why is this true? Why is this a functor in the sense that it's compatible with composition? That's exactly the flat base change theorem. The flat base change theorem says that if you push forward and pull back, that coincides with pulling back and pushing forward, provided the map here is actually flat and proper. So that's great. There are other examples too. So for example, I can take, if I take a group G, let's start off with a finite group G, and I can look at the category of G-sets, and I can just do everything and everything. The theory of Mackey functors of this shape is equivalent to the homotopy theory of G equivariant spectra. So this is the same thing as the theory of G equivariant spectra in the sense of Lewis, May, Steinberg. And I should probably state some names here because I'm not the first person to have noticed this. Andrew, do you know who I should name here for this observation? Should I name you? Because you knew this too, certainly. But I think a lot of people knew this already. It's not just this isn't a new fact that these two are the same. If I have a profinite group, then I want to be a little bit more careful. So if G is profinite, then again I can start with a category, well, I should just be a little more careful all around. I should look at the category of pro-G spaces. And then again I'll allow everything to be egressive. That becomes a trend until you get to duality questions. Everything is going to be egressive, but only the sort of finite covers are going to be ingressive. And this defines a good theory of G equivariant spectra for G profinite as well. No, these are, yeah. How do I want to say this? They're local systems over BG with some finiteness properties. So these things are local systems. Maybe I'll say it that way. They're local systems over G with certain finiteness properties. So in effect, to specify one of these, let me say what you have to do. You have to specify a formal gadget, which is going to be called the H fixed points for every subgroup H, for every open subgroup H of here. And anytime you have normal subgroups, K and H, you need to specify an equivalence between whatever it is I'm supposed to write down here. So K, X, H. K and XK, I guess. Something like that. Yes, that's right. So if you look at the classifying topos for this pro group, then you get exactly the right thing. Except I also want to impose some finiteness conditions that I'm being sloppy about here. But okay, so these are three interesting examples. Do I want to name any more? Probably not. Oh, well, maybe it doesn't have to be finite or profinite. You could, for example, take Z itself. And then you might have seen the notion of a Green functor before. It's sometimes called a Witt complex. So the notion of a Green functor. So remember Green functor, well, I haven't talked about what Green functors are yet, but if you use sort of Z sets and allow everything here and only finite guys here, Then Mackey functors on this guy, if you look at the commutative algebra objects in there, these are exactly what are usually called the Witt complexes. So these are just some examples to give you an idea of why these objects are interesting. But I have a particular one I want to bang on about, right? This whole story started because I was interested in algebraic K-theory. And what I've learned now is that algebraic K-theory is a spectrum-valued Mackey functor. In fact, it's a little bit more than that. It's actually a commutative algebra object for a certain symmetric monoidal structure. So, loosely speaking, where does that thing come from? Well, I said that if you had a product on C, then that gave rise to a symmetric monoidal structure on this positive Bernstein category. If you have this symmetric monoidal structure and you're looking at functors of such and such kind into the category of spectra, then that category itself inherits a symmetric monoidal structure. This is called the Day convolution product. So the category of Mackey functors for some triple like this is going to be exactly the category of functors of a certain kind from B plus C into spectra. And now there's actually a commutative tensor product on this category itself, and it comes about because, well, we have a symmetric monoidal structure on the source, and so the Day convolution product allows us to turn this into a symmetric monoidal structure here. So more precisely, if I have two of these functors, Well, so if I have two of these Mackey functors, M and N, then I can do them pairwise and do spectra cross spectra. I know what to do with spectra. I know how to take their smash product. And on the other hand, I've got the symmetric monoidal structure here, which lands in the Burnside category. And so now all I need to do is take the left con extension down to here. And that's the tensor product of M and N as Mackey functors. And that gives us a good symmetric monoidal structure on this category. And so now what does it mean to be a commutative ring object for this tensor product? Well, it means exactly all the things that we said it means. It means that the pullbacks, so it means that if you have two objects, then you can, you know, if you have two elements of the values of your Mackey functors, then you can tensor them together. But then the other thing that it means, so that you know, the value of each object itself is an E-infinity ring spectrum. But the other thing that it means is that the pullbacks are going to be ring maps, and the push forwards have to be module maps. And that plus some additional coherence data is all that you actually require. So the upshot of this is that the K-theory actually defines one of these E-infinity green functors. It defines a commutative algebra object, commutative up to coherent homotopy, inside this infinity category of Mackey functors. Now, so what? Well, the point is that the new philosophy is that anytime you have some commutative ring objects in some reasonably good category, and this is a pretty great category, by the way, then the first thing you ought to be able to do is do derived algebraic geometry with it. So let's do that. I'm going to do that in a very particular way here. So, there's a relationship between the first two examples, or maybe the first and the third example here. Namely, if I take the category of all schemes, and I restrict attention just to the category of schemes over S that are actually equipped with finite Etal maps, they're finite Etal maps to S, then this, of course, admits a forgetful functor here, which respects all the structure in psi, but it's also equivalent to the pi 1 SS sets, where this is the Etal pi 1, at least if S is a connected scheme and little s is some good choice of geometric point. So in particular, what that means is that if I've got a Burnside category, if I've got a Mackey functor defined on all of schemes, then I can extract from it a Mackey functor defined on the Etal pi 1. So if I have a Mackey functor, say, oh, I don't know, K-theory, which we agreed was a fun functor to think about, then I can restrict it, well, not really contained, but restrict it to this Burnside category of Etal pi 1 sets. So that means now that K-theory defines a Mackey functor from this category to the category of spectra, and again, it's a commutative green functor. So I want to contemplate it as a geometric object if I can. So now, in the interest of time, I'm going to narrow in on a special case of this, that I can state my theorem and the talk will be over. All right, so I'm going to narrow in on a very special case of this. The case that I'm going to be interested in is that K is going to be a field. And just to save time, I'm going to assume that it contains all L power roots of unity. I don't actually need this condition in the end, but just to make life simple, let's assume it for now. Then what can I do? Well, so I've got the absolute Galois group of this field. And any time that I have an action of this Galois group, or really of any profinite group on a scheme X, then I can define a Mackey functor, in fact a Burnside, a green functor, for this group. Namely, what can I do? this will be the sort of equivariant K-theory, so I'll underline it. It's going to go from here to spectra. And what do I have to do? Well, I have to tell you what to do for every G set, for every GK set. But every GK set is can be written as a sum of orbits. So all I have to do is tell you what to do for all the orbits. So all I'm going to do is I'm going to do the following. So this is X is a G scheme. It's a G scheme. Sorry. Yes. So X is a scheme now. And it admits an action of the profinite group GK. That's my only assumption right now. And I'm going to define something that I should call something like K-theory of GKX. And now what do I do? Well, to any G-set of the form GK mod H, I'm going to take the K-theory of the category of perfect complexes on the quotient stack of X by GK. This defines a perfectly good Green functor for my group G. So in particular, I happen to know a scheme out there that admits an action of GK. So let me describe it in that case. Yes? Oh, yeah, by H. You're right. Sorry. By H. That's right. That's secretly a Borel construction. So this is properly called the equivariant algebraic K-theory, if you like those sorts of names. That's really what I'm trying to do here. But there's some really interesting properties that this thing has. So if we think of the trivial action of the group on the field K, let's think about what happens there. So I take the trivial action of GK on K itself. That's a lame action. So when I take these quotient stacks, I'm just adding more and more and more stackiness, and I'm not doing anything apart from adding stackiness. So what I get here, my so-called, these are often called the H fixed points. The value of this quotient space is often called the H fixed points of your thing. The H fixed points of this guy are nothing more than the K-theory of the category of representations over little k of the group H. So we're putting together the categories of representations of all the various subgroups of GK, all the various open subgroups of GK, and we're constructing a single Green functor out of it. On the other hand, I also have the canonical action of GK on an algebraic closure. If I look at the H fixed points of this, then what I'm getting is the K theory of the H fixed points of the algebraic closure. So I'm getting the K theories of all the finite extensions of K under this construction. Okay, so now what happens? So I've got this wonderful et al. Map, right? That's what I was supposed to be doing. I was supposed to be looking at et al. Maps, and I was supposed to be saying that when I applied spec of the K-theory, then that turned it into an et al. Map, and then once I saw that that was true, then everything was nice, and I had my theorem. So when I tried to do it with just ordinary derived algebraic geometry, I failed. So I'm going to try and do it here in this equivariant context and see if I succeed. So here goes. This is representations over K of H. Oh yeah, bar is definitely not on this one. Sorry, I'm not looking at the identity map. Thanks. Or any other automorphism of K-bar for that matter. So let's do it. Let's understand what this guy is. So if I take the homotopy groups, what are homotopy groups in this funny context? Well, if I take homotopy groups, pi I, then I don't just get an abelian group anymore. Instead, what I get is a Mackey functor now valued not in spectra, but in abelian groups. Okay, so in effect, I'm just applying pi I object by object inside my Burnside category. And I get out some gadget. And I like that gadget. So if I look at pi naught of this guy, I like that gadget, by the way. What I mean is that this thing is part of a T structure on the category of Mackey functors. So I do mean something precise. So if I look at pi naught of these gadgets, well, I know exactly what it is I'm getting into, right? I do this guy, and I'm just getting the K-theory of all the representation rings, K-naught of all the representation rings put together in a single object. That single object already has a name. We know it and love it. It's just the Burnside Mackey functor. And unfortunately, I have to use B again. The other B was supposed to be scripty, but the scriptiness died away eventually. But so this is the Burnside Mackey functor. Green functor, I suppose I should say. On the other hand, if I take this guy, well, I'm taking the K-theory of a whole bunch of different kinds of fields, so the value at every orbit is exactly the same. The only thing that ever happens is that my transfer maps multiply by the index. That's all that happens. So this is what's known as a constant Mackey functor, as just said. This is a so-called, I don't know why I wrote an H there. This is the constant Mackey functor at Z. I know why I wrote an H, because it's something I'm about to say. Okay, but now what I see is that in just taking the tensor product up to K bar actually gives me a map from one of these guys to the other one. So I have a morphism of green functors in this direction. Now, these things are effectively classifying representations of GK. These things are just vector K vector spaces for all the various different field extensions of my K. And so these both admit what you could call dimension maps down to this constant guy here. I'll go further. I'll also quotient out by an L that's invertible in K. Because the original program was to try and find some L completion of the K theory such that we had a compatible relationship between the fixed points of one and the value of the other. So I'm going to go down here to this guy. Okay, so what I'm supposed to do is I'm supposed to do geometry with these things. By the way, these two green functors are completely different, right? The Burnside functor and the green functor, they are different in general. They've no relationship. And not just in general, almost all the time. So let me go now to a geometric picture. And in the last 5 minutes, I'll show you what happens. So I'm supposed to take spec of these objects. That's what I was told to do. So I'm going to take spec of these objects, and so I get a map in the opposite direction. So here it is, spec. This is spec of KG, K, K bar. This is the one that has to do with the K theory of all the field extensions of K. And here it is, spec of K, G, K, K. This is the one that has to do with the representation theory of all the subgroups of this guy. So let me draw it like this. And so we've got a map like this. And I'm drawing these squares different because I want to emphasize the fact that these are really, really different schemes. They're different on pi naught already. They're different. However, they contain a copy of this constant guy, this hz, and they also contain a copy of hsl, which I can regard as a point on this curve here. This map carries this thing isomorphically onto this thing, and the point maps to the point. So what is the statement? The statement is that if you look at the formal completion of this map at these points, then what you get is an equivalence. Let me write that down formally. So theorem. And this was conjectured by Carlson and proved in like a Abelian case, basically, by Carlson, and the general case is here. The theorem is that when you look at the map on the completions along this thing, which I'll just denote by hat L in order to remind you of the K-theory statement, when I look at the induced map on the completions of this map, you get an equivalence. Why? The first step is to prove that they're the same on pi naught. And this is the step where it's really critical that I had the Lth roots of unity in here. It turns out that if you want to compute pi naught of these things, it's not that hard. There's a spectral sequence. It's called the algebraic to geometric spectral sequence. And for higher degree things, it's very complicated, but to compute pi naught, it's pretty darn easy. And what you discover is that the special structure of the Galois group that you have, when K contains all the Lth roots of unity, means that it's very easy to see that this is an isomorphism on pi naught. And that was already proved by Carlson. So it's an iso on pi naught. That means, by the way, that when you take the completion of the Burnside Mackey functor at L, and you take the completion of the constant Mackey functor at L, you're actually getting the same answer. That's sort of a surprise. But it's true because of the structure of this Galois group. So that's a check. And then the next thing that I'm supposed to do, in line with the failed proof in the earlier case, is I'm supposed to show that the cotangent complex vanishes. So I'm supposed to show that, well, I'm sort of being a little sloppy here, but I'm supposed to show that these cotangent complexes vanish. So how do I do that? I work inductively. So I see that I have a map down to HFL, and I've got an isomorphism here. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the square zero extension classified by the universal derivation from HFL into here and from HFL into here, and I'm going to get thickenings of this guy. And I'm going to keep iterating that process. And I'm going to slowly work up until I actually have a map between the two completions. At each stage, I've used the universal derivation in order to construct the next stage of my filtration. Because I've done that, what I know is that I can guarantee that this is true, provided that I know that the cotangent complex of this is just the Burnside functor itself, or the Green functor itself. And this is just the other Green functor itself. But then I want to L complete this thing, namely I want to tensor it up to the L completion of the K theory of GKK. It's enough for me to show that this thing actually vanishes. But that's true because I can work out an explicit representation of this cotangent complex as a certain K-theory spectrum, there's a fiber of two K-theory spectra. And because I can write down that explicit thing, I can actually compute the values of this guy, and I can show that they all vanish. And so the conclusion is that we actually have a comparison theorem between here and here. Now, it's reasonable to say that that's not very interesting. So in the remaining minus 30 seconds, let me tell you why it could be potentially pretty interesting. Well, let me just think of the values of this thing on some fixed L. The action of the Galois group on this side is free. So I know that if I look at the L-adic completion here, that's going to coincide with the fixed points of the action of the Galois group on the completion here. But by this theorem, that's the same thing as the K-theory of GKK completed at L, GK. Now, the remarkable statement is that in this case here, what is this guy? This is the guy that's controlling the representations of K. We can actually compute this, and in fact, Carlson was already aware of this. We can compute this. It's nothing more than the complex K theory tensored with a suitable form of the Burnside ring, and then completed at the L, at the augmentation ideal plus L. So this gives us what I think is the first spectrum level description of the L complete K theory of a field. And in this case, I have to deal with the restriction that it has to contain all the L power roots of unity. But it is a spectrum level description of this K-theory spectrum. Okay, so on that I'll stop.